Brian Jennings, CEO, American Coalition for Ethanol.
Brian, a lot happening within the renewable fuels sector in 2018. Let's begin with certainty on the renewable fuel standard and some of the things that have transpired within the Environmental Protection Agency this year that have been concerning.
It's been a doozy of a year, Mark, and certainty on the renewable fuel standard is something we desperately need. It's something we haven't had, frankly, for the last 7 or 8 months. After learning about the unprecedented number of small refinery exemptions and the flood of RINs that sort of creates, and then the depressing price that has on RIN value, we just haven't had that certainty. We believe the law does not enable EPA to retroactively grant these small refinery exemptions. We further believe that the law requires them, if they grant a small refinery an exemption, they must reallocate those gallons to other refiners. And so we're pressing the acting EPA Administrator Andy Wheeler to abide by the letter and spirit of the law. As a former Capitol Hill staffer, I actually think that Andy Wheeler is going to be much more respectful about the role Congress played in crafting the RFS. But here we are, August 17th, and we don't really have any certainty about how this will be handled. That's why ACE and others have filed a couple of lawsuits, and we're just continuing to put pressure on the administration.
Administrator Wheeler was in Iowa earlier this week, and he talked about the RVP relief, I know, and from what I gathered, still is hinting at this trade-off where, yes, ethanol will get something they've been wanting with greater E15 access, but that oil would also get something in return. Is that kind of the direction you feel like he wants to go in?
It is the direction he appears to want to go in, and that's not satisfactory to us whatsoever. It's not satisfactory to our champions in Congress, and Senator Grassley recently has spoken out about that. We have to make a more compelling case to Acting Administrator Wheeler, to the White House, that the refiners have been getting their way all year long. And we have 3 or 4 presidential promises now to allow E15 and higher blends to have this Reed vapor pressure relief. And so we really are going to put a full court press between now and the election, Mark, on trying to put that pressure on the White House through candidates for Congress, through our champions, through governors. We feel like we've got some leverage between now and the election, and we're really trying to get our grassroots members to sort of exercise that leverage so we can try to break an RVP rulemaking free that's clean of any additional sort of nonsense for refiners.
November is shaping up to be potentially a very pivotal month, not only with the elections earlier in the month, but I believe at the end of the month, we'll get finality on the renewable fuel obligations, and we've seen the proposals. Any reason to think that what has been proposed could be altered for the better or worse?
There's always hope, but I will say this. EPA was very careful in their proposal to say, we know people don't like these small refinery exemptions. We're not going to deal with it in this rulemaking. We know we lost a lawsuit under the Obama administration regarding a waiver to the RFS, and the court instructed us to restore some gallons to the statute. We're not going to deal with it in this rulemaking. And so there's a lot of unfinished business that EPA needs to address that they seem to want to ignore as far as setting the 2019 volumes. And so I cannot sit here today and tell you with confidence that we are going to have those issues remedied in the 2019 rulemaking, but we're sure going to try. We encouraged our members, today is the deadline to submit comments. We're encouraging our members to weigh in. And it just, I think, adds to what you said earlier about the election in November. It's a pivotal month. We have some influence, we believe, because of the role that rural America played in helping elect Donald Trump. He's not on the ballot this fall. We know that. But he desperately wants to keep his majority in Congress. He needs certain candidates to win or incumbents to win. And we're really going to try to put the squeeze on some of those candidates to, in turn, put pressure on the White House to fix some of these problems.
Certainly, a lot of your focus at the conference this week is on what's happening now. But as you discuss the industry 5, 10, 15 years down the road, Brian, when you think about the electric technology, I was talking to Ken Anderson earlier today, and he thought he heard someone discussing automobile manufacturers maybe going away from flex fuel vehicle manufacturing. I don't know if he heard that correctly or what's going on, but as you look at what could be happening in the future, how is the ethanol industry preparing itself for what could be some pretty dramatic changes?
Yeah, excellent question. And what we think we have going for us long term is that not only are we generally pretty economical, we're a low cost fuel generally compared to gasoline from petroleum, and frankly, renewable fuels from other sources around the world. Corn ethanol has really proven itself to be a low cost fuel. But beyond that, what we think brings some advantage to us long term is the low carbon attributes of our fuel and the high octane attributes of our fuel. We are confident that a higher octane fuel is going to be necessary in the future. It's a matter of when, not if. It may take us longer to get there than some expected, but high octane fuel is going to be important. Oil refiners can make high octane fuel, but they can't do it as economically as we can. And the linchpin, I think, for the ethanol industry is high-octane fuel from refineries is not low carbon. We have an incredible story to tell about the greenhouse gas footprint of corn ethanol production. It's getting better and better every day. We have a panel discussion on that this morning. ACE is releasing a white paper that sort of dissects the life cycle analysis that's currently taking place with corn production and corn ethanol, Mark. And we've pointed out some shortcomings in that life cycle analysis that if some updates were made to reflect what's going on in corn production on farms and in ethanol facilities today, that the carbon footprint of corn ethanol would be substantially better than it is now. And if programs like the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard become a model for the Midwest, become a model for the nation someday, which we think it will, we're trying to position our industry to be a big part of that solution down the road based on the low carbon attributes.
Last thing I want to ask you about, and how the U.S. ethanol industry is positioning itself as an exporter. And when you look at markets around the world that make sense for the U.S. to, we're taking care of the domestic needs and we're able to produce a lot of ethanol. So as you look to expand and to build on what's already happening in those overseas markets, what's the outlook there?
Great question again, and thank goodness we've had the export markets because of some artificial constraints to using more ethanol here at home. We can produce well over 16 billion gallons of ethanol in the United States. It's incredible. And thankfully, other countries see value in not just the low cost of our product, but the greenhouse gas impacts, the added octane benefits. You know, believe it or not, despite a tariff rate quota in Brazil, Brazil continues to be a top destination for us this year. And I think as they adopt their new low carbon program, Renova Bio, U.S. corn ethanol is going to continue to be shipped to Brazil. Our friends in Canada, despite some issues with NAFTA, continue to be a big purchaser of U.S. ethanol, and we want to continue to foster that. The game changers probably, Mark, are countries like China, who we know want to go to E10 in most of the country by 2020, and that will result in an incredible demand in ethanol. But China has a 70% tariff on our ethanol right now, and so the Chinese market is closed off. But we believe that we're going to get that back at some point in time. And Mexico is another game changer. That country is sort of trying to relax some of the government control over their fuel supply. They're starting to turn over the reins to businesses to market and retail fuel. We've been down there. Ron Lamberty on our staff has been to Mexico 4 or 5 times this year, meeting with petroleum marketers, helping them understand the benefits of E10. And so we are trying very hard to develop those export markets, and it's especially critical as we've run into some hurdles here at home to using more ethanol.
Brian, anything else you want to make sure we talk about today?
No, I think we've covered it.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.